Mini episode 873 of the FDH Lounge is brought to you by Sportsology, delivering unconventional columns and webcasts about sports, TV, music, movies, and more. Follow them on the web at sportsology.com.
The FDH Lounge. You want to schedule your life around it.
A long time ago, on a gloomy, wet Cleveland spring night, two men stand alone amidst the late night drizzle. Their voices echo across the vacant station parking lot as they debate the merits of the great American radio show that have been missing for far too long. On that night, an idea was born. That idea became the FDH Lounge. Welcome to the FDH Lounge.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to FDH Lounge mini episode number 873. You've got with you today a real treat, two FDH Lounge original dignitaries, Rick Morris and Chris Galloway. We are doing our AFC preview for the 2017 season. And for the entirety of the FDH Lounge show, Chris and I have been talking football going all the way back during the 10 years. So it's great to be able to do a season preview with him today. Welcome to the program, my friend.
Thank you, Rick. Always a pleasure to be in the lounge.
Great to have you in here, and it will be very enlightening, I think, to take a look at the AFC and what we're thinking for this year. So I've actually got specific record projections here. They are slightly updated in some cases from the most recent version of Pro Football Draftology 2017, or actually, Pro Football Draftology was a couple months ago. This would be Fantasy Football Draftology 2017, available on the main page at the FDHLounge.com and FantasyDraftHelp.com. Some of these are a little tweaked and updated since then. Let's start with the East, and you and I talked a little bit off-air about this, Chris, that if you look at the course of New England's run, there are credits and I think discredits to be made, maybe in equal measure if you look at the historical thing here. The discredit would be much like the Cavs getting pretty much a bye through the Eastern Conference the last 3 years, and I'll go ahead and say it the next 4 years, including this upcoming season here. New England has kind of had the same thing as far as making it into the playoffs with the AFC East and getting through there. Those couple of years that were kind of a little bit of an outlier where Eric Mangini somehow bungled the Jets to a high enough place temporarily in the standings. Rex Ryan kind of took it to another level before he got exposed. That's really the hole in the donut of New England's run. But on the other hand, nobody's ever gone back-to-back as team of the decade in the NFL, at least 1960 forward, and New England is the leader in the clubhouse to do that. They were the team of the 2000s, team of the 2010s so far. Closest team on their tail is Seattle, who New England beat in the Super Bowl. So Seattle would have a little bit of doing to run them down. This year looks no different than the rest. I look ahead at the AFC East this year. I've got New England winning it at 13-3, which is actually a little more conservative than where some people have them pegged. But I think that's just a lot of hyperbole as far as them going 16-0 or whatever the case may be. I've got Miami at 9-7, not a playoff team this year, but I think they're going to settle in nicely because of the rest of the division being a complete washout. Buffalo appears to have belatedly moved into tank mode. I've got them at 4-12, and what more can you say about the Jets? I got them at 1-15 just because the 2016 Browns proved how hard it is to go 0-16. So the landscape, as I see it, really is kind of a consensus in the AFC East this year, it seems, Chris. So I'd be surprised if you were too far off of any of the different thoughts I had for the teams.
Well, if I was going to do record predictions, I didn't in general, but I do say I agree actually with all your predictions in the AFC East on record. That's exactly how I would have liked it. But when you talk about the Patriots and their historical run, you know, it's kind of like we talk about in college football when you win your conference or, you're out of conference games you scheduled 6 years earlier. I mean, you can only play the games that you are given. And it's not their fault that most of their division has been pretty lousy over that time period. They're playing the games that the NFL is scheduling for them. So we can't really hold that against them too badly. And also, lastly, on that point, if you think about some of the reason those other teams were so bad is because they got beat by the Pats. You know, I mean, it was the Patriots, you know, putting two losses for the Bills and the Dolphins 3 year on their record. So some of the reason those teams were poor was because, you know, they got it handed to them by the Patriots.
That is true, and it looks to be another season of that being the case. And it's funny how much things can change, because at the beginning of training camp, it certainly would have looked like Miami could have been ripe for getting overtaken by the Bills. And I am buying on the Bills medium term and long term. I think that Sean McDermott is going to prove to be a good hire as head coach for them. But from Tannehill going down, Jay Cutler being able to step in, he has that established chemistry with Adam Gase. Things have worked out better there than you would have thought. And Miami's been a team that's been plagued for several years. Myself and another one of our FDH football analysts, Kyle Ross, have said this for years, really kind of a stars and scrubs kind of a thing here. You throw a lot of money at guys like Sue on the defensive line, and they've really been plagued for a number of years by having blatant holes in some areas, some great players like Cameron Wake in other areas, but ultimately you don't win anything long-term by that being the case. They're the team in the division that simply by default is the closest to New England, and I think they're doing better, at least medium-term, by growing and branching out from that, and having the semblance of a good running game going forward is going to be a big part of that, I think.
Now, I like this Miami team. I like Adam Gase, and I like where they are. I mean, listen, they're going to compete for a playoff spot. But in the AFC, those are going to just be hard to come by. So I'm with you. I can see the Dolphins with Cutler going 9-7, you know, possibly 10-6, maybe splitting one game with the Patriots, and sort of being right there at the end with a chance to get one of those wild card spots. I'm like you, though. I think they just miss out on that, because they do have some holes and they do have some question marks and some different areas. I'm a little concerned about their secondary, things like that. So, but I'm with you also on the Bills. Like the medium term, I think their big problem is what are they doing with Tyrod Taylor? Are they going to keep him around? Are they going to jettison him and go into quarterback purgatory? You know, that the Browns have been in for 20 years. You know, that's the problem that the Bills are having right now, I think, internally with their brain trust, is you've got a guy who's serviceable, who's young, who has some moments in some games where he really puts up some good numbers. But then at the end of the day, you know, is he a top 10 quarterback that you feel like you can get deep into the playoffs or a Super Bowl with? No. But then again, if you go in another direction, what do you have? And so they're going to find themselves next year in a real quandary as to what to do there.
Yeah, it's going to be kind of a difficult spot for them. But again, the bleakest spot of all in this division obviously belongs to the Jets. And this is a circumstance where, as bad as it was with the 2016 Browns, at least they were going into the season. It was the first year of a new regime. You knew that there was going to be patience going into the next year no matter what. The Jets are going into a year where almost certainly they're going to be the worst team in the league. Almost certainly it's all going to get blown up after that, and guys won't even have whatever tiny level of security that the 2016 Browns players might have had. The Jets players are going to have much less than that, because they know they're going to be evaluated by a brand new set of eyes with no loyalty to them next year.
Yeah, the Jets are a train wreck, and this whole idea of tanking for somebody like Darnold, you know, it sounds great, except for the fact that you go out and you never know with college kids, when you're talking 19, 20-year-olds, how they're going to do season to season and how they're going to progress as a player. I mean, certainly we saw Darnold struggle badly against Western Michigan in Game 1. Maybe some of that's just, you know, spent the summer reading his own press clippings and, you know, came out against a MAC team at home and laid an egg. They still won because superior talent on every side of the ball, but certainly he didn't, you know, if you're sitting there in the Jets war room, you didn't watch that game going, boy, I feel really great about us killing an entire season for this kid. So, you know, be careful, Jets and Jets fans, you know, what you wish for, because, you know, some of these guys that, you know, everybody thinks that they're going to be a for sure number one and an all-pro, it may not work out that way. And at least, you know, at least we saw with the Browns, it wasn't about a player or a position. It was about stripping it down to the studs to, you know, yield a lot of draft picks and everything else and a more comprehensive strategy. I'm not seeing as much of that with New York. I'm seeing more of a strip it down to the studs, but I don't really understand what beyond that, where they're going with it.
Well, organizationally, that's been the big bugaboo in the AFC East, is that teams have not been able to get it right in the front office as far as having a direction. The Dolphins have always been my 1A team as far as who I root for, so it's been a point of frustration for me for several years. I'm still not convinced that front office flowchart in Miami necessarily is working well, but Adam Gase down on the field, I think, is going to smooth out a lot of warts. As far as not picking Miami to make the playoffs, which I'm not, I'll go ahead and say that now, 9-7, but not a wild card. One of the things is that, again, there's only a certain number of teams that repeat in the playoffs from year to year. It's generally about 6 or 7, somewhere in that ballpark. And Miami, to me, is one of those low-hanging fruit kind of teams, Chris. There are so many teams that you cannot pretty much make a case against them making the playoffs at the beginning of the year. So to me, anybody that you're even on the fence about, if they made the playoffs last year, the law of averages tells you they're out.
Well, we know every year there's usually about 4 teams that make it the year before that don't the next year.
Yeah.
And I think that Miami, I'm with you, Miami is one of those teams that's right on the fence. You know, I mean, last year they should have lost the Browns.
Yeah.
And then, you know, they came on strong late in the season, made a push, got into the playoffs. Again, I'm with you. I think 9-7, maybe 10-6 at the most. I think if they're 10-6, I think they're probably in. I think at 9-7, I think this year, I think they're out. You know, when we get and talk about the West and some of these other divisions, you know, that's going to be, that'll be self-evident why at 9-7 they'll be on the outside looking in.
Absolutely. And in going through the next division to look at, the AFC North, really kind of strikes me as kind of a bell curve. I've got Pittsburgh at the top at 11-5. I don't think they're really going to get a solid challenge from anybody. Baltimore and Cincinnati, to me, I think are settling into more or less kind of late-stage decay as far as where they're at. Cincinnati went out in the offseason and really tried to upgrade some of their weapons offensively. Joe Mixon, John Ross, medium-term, I think they're going to solidify in there. But, again, Baltimore and Cincinnati just have a lot of holes, I think, on both sides of the ball relative to where they used to be. Baltimore's skill position talent overall, I think, is some of the worst in the league, at least on paper. You've got the Browns at 5-11. That's what I'm picking for them. And one of the most interesting stories in the league with this whole Moneyball thing, you and I have talked a little bit about this off-air during the offseason, or actually fairly extensively, I would say. And one of the concerns that I have at this point with the whole Moneyball approach and the whole, and as I said to you off-air, cutting Joe Haden, to me, Joe Haden is no great shakes at this point. The whole thing of cutting him to save $4 million when you're about $50 to $60 million under the cap is worrying to me as far as the direction of the organization and what they're going to prioritize. That kind of thing, as far as an insistence with the green eye shades that every last guy on the roster is worth what they're being paid, at any given point in time, there's going to be guys on this team that are clearly underpaid based on their production. And I don't think Sashi Brown is going to be walking around the locker room with unsolicited bonus checks for those guys. So if it's perceived as a one-way street, that's something that could be very damaging to morale.
Well, the Browns, we can get into the Browns a little bit. I'm with you on this. I think they win this division easily. I think that the Ravens are taking several steps backwards, and if they lose Flacco,
oh yeah,
stretch of the season, they could finish worse than the Browns.
True.
I don't like their roster by and large. They've got a few good players, and they've got a guy like Flacco who's probably, you know, 10th, 11th best quarterback in the league, and he's right there, number 10. Somewhere, maybe 11, somewhere in that spot. So he helps them band-aid a lot of problems with that roster. But they are definitely suffering from, you know, the NFL equivalent of dry rot. And that's just, you know, sometimes that's just that's the bell curve of teams that have been good for so long. At some point they got old, some of their draft picks didn't hit. You know, and so they've got issues now all across the roster. So I think the Ravens are not making the playoffs. I know there are some people out there that have them in the playoffs. I don't see how you can put them in the playoffs. We talk about the Bengals. They have a lot of great young talent. I mean, look, Joe Mixon's going to be their starting running back by the end of the season. They're going to start it off with Jeremy Hill, but by the end of the year, it's going to be Mixon. They've got some good weapons on offense. Now, and the defense is shaky at some spots, especially in the secondary. I think they are getting, they're a little bit overrated. But you look at, the Bengals are going to go and farm that line tape, that offensive line. With the loss of several players, obviously Zeitler over the Browns, and losing their left tackle to Los Angeles. I mean, they've got some guys on there that are unproven, were somewhat shaky last year. If those guys play great and they step up as a unit, the Bengals will be fine and be contending for a playoff spot. You know, they could be 10-6 if that line holds up. Even with all the talent that they have, guys like Green and, you know, Bernard, I mean, they've got some guys that can make some things happen, but if that line is shaky, Andy Dalton's going to be in trouble. He'll be in over his head. You know, and you could see the Bengals going 7-9 very easily with if the line doesn't, if their offensive line doesn't make it happen. And then, you know, lastly, our beloved Browns. I'm with you on 5-11. As you know, I put a hash on the barrel head in Vegas to beat the over 4.5. You know, we all see the direction that they're going in. It's easy for me to sort of nitpick a move here and there that I disagree with. I mean, I'm with you. I would not have shed Hayden just to save a couple bucks. He's probably the third or fourth best cornerback on that roster right now. And in the Greg Williams system, where it is man-to-man heavy, that's a bad fit for Joe Hayden. You know, that's where he is struggling now. And the Steelers they're going to run a lot of zone with their corners this year. And so he's a much better fit with Pittsburgh. But I'm with you. I think everybody knows that we weren't going to keep him around next year. But having him around this year for just an extra $4 million for depth, you know, comes week 4 or 5, if somebody goes down with an injury like McCourty, you know, there's going to be a lot of people saying, well, why did you get rid of him? And that would be a justifiable criticism. Beyond that, I can make the same case about getting rid of John Greco, a guy who can play every position on the line. I mean, why get rid of that kind of versatile depth for a guy that wasn't costing you much? He wasn't that old. That's the more puzzling move. Hayden, I get. It's a system decision. Why are you going to pay $11 million for a guy who is basically going to be your third or fourth corner if you're going to be true to your actual depth chart in terms of quality versus playing a guy just because you're paying? Losing Greco, I think, is going to be very quick. One or two injuries on that line, and we will very quickly be regretting letting him go. So that's a move I disagree with. Overall, as you and I have talked about in the past, it's the first time since 99, I mean, in terms of a regime, that I understand what they're doing, why they're doing it, and how they're going about it in a very systematic way. And whether it'll work or not, as I've always said, I don't know. No one has a crystal ball. But I do see what they're doing, and I do see them starting to reap the rewards of being patient, having a process, and whether that's process, you know, is analytics, money ball, whatever you want to call it. They're sticking to their playbook, and they're executing on it. So from that standpoint, I can be very supportive of what the Browns are doing. I think they have 5-11, and I think that we'll see what we have in Kaiser as the season goes on. It's going to be ups and downs with that young man. You're going to have games where we lose the game because of him, and then we're going to have times during games when his youth and his arm make a special play that nobody else could have done on that roster. And, you know, you'll walk away from that game saying, boy, he's the future. So there's going to be a lot of up and down when you have a 21-year-old rookie, the youngest quarterback in the league. And, you know, this is going to be a telling year for the Browns' direction. I mean, if they go 5-11 or 6-10, I think people can genuinely have some optimism, especially with the volume of picks and especially with how far under the cap they're going to be. I mean, they're going to go into next year a solid $60 million plus under the cap, which is just amazing if you think about it in terms of the young talent. There's only 3 players on that roster that are age 30 or older, and that's Joe Thomas, the punter Colquitt, and the aforementioned Jason McCourty. And I mean, so you think about it, you think about a young roster. The Browns have put all of this, their plan, they've put it in place, and we'll see. Obviously, they're not going to challenge for a playoff spot this year. But I think they, by the end of the year, they could be a team that people really don't want to face because of that youth. I want to also just point out the Steelers, they are my pick for the Super Bowl, to be in the Super Bowl out of the AFC. It's pretty obvious to me with some of the moves that they're making on picking up safeties and Hayden. They're going for it this year. They are all in as an organization. And I don't know if that's because they decided they came so close last year, making the AFC, you know, making the AFC championship and then getting spanked by the Patriots, whether they feel like they can make that next step with a couple moves. I don't know if it's because they're afraid that Roethlisberger may retire after this season. I don't think he will. I think that was just his talk after the season ended, just to try to get his teammates and his front office's attention, which was, hey, I need better out of my teammates, and I need better decisions out of my front office and my coaching staff because my time is short. You know, Ben is a guy that physically is not going to play past 40. You know, he's 35. You can see him probably playing until he's about 38 or so, and that's probably about it. So if you figure you've got 3 years of Roethlisberger left, you better make it count right now. And you better go all in. And I think that they've done that, and I think that they are going to get over the hump and get into the Super Bowl this year.
That's very interesting. Well, just a quick note back on Kizer for a second, that again, you and I have a lot of hope and a lot of promise for him, and I did not at all think that coming out of the draft. The work that Hugh Jackson has done to fix his footwork and accuracy has been phenomenal, and I think there is great cause that he is the guy going forward, and that the Browns are going to be one of the more interesting stories in the league in the next year or two, believe it or not. But on Pittsburgh there, that must clearly be a thing where the only time, and nobody from Pittsburgh likes me pointing this out, but facts are inconvenient sometimes. The only times that Pittsburgh has made it to the Super Bowl in the last 15 years is when somebody played spoiler with the Patriots, whether it be Rex Ryan doing a run-in and somehow getting the Jets in the AFC Championship game or whatever fluke the case may be. So you clearly must have it because Pittsburgh has proven definitively over the course of time, no matter how much you turn over the players, the coach in Pittsburgh, whatever the case may be, they can't get over that hump. So you must have somebody playing the spoiler with New England.
I do. I have the Pats losing in the second round in my mind. And I agree with you. And a lot of that's just coaching. I mean,
yes.
Whether you're Cowher or you know the current coaching staff. I mean, the reality is Belichick and his team has outcoached the coaches from Pittsburgh time and time again. And you know, and there's no way you can argue that Pittsburgh has better coaches at this point. So from a schematic standpoint, not from a talent standpoint, but a schematic standpoint, they're going to get outcoached again if they have to face the Patriots. But I actually think it'll work out that it'll be one of these teams that are sort of, you know, challenging, whether it's somebody like the Titans or the Chiefs. Someone is going to surprise the Patriots, you know, in Foxborough. Because don't forget, the Patriots have lost a bunch of games in the playoffs. You know, everybody acts like the Patriots go to the Super Bowl every year, but they don't. And usually if they lose in that second round. And I wouldn't be surprised to see that this time around. Look, Tom Brady was great in the second half of that Super Bowl last year, but he was dreadful in the first half, and he was dreadful in the first part of the third quarter. I mean, let's be honest, he was awful. He was having a bad Super Bowl, and he rallied with a lot of help from his teammates, guys like Edelman with that catch. If you look at Tom's numbers, if you watched his play last year, not just his numbers, he had all these great numbers after the suspension. If you just watched his play at different times during games last year, you could see the end. It was apparent at times that physically making certain throws with as much zip, that cliff is coming for Tom. And I don't know if it's this year or it's next year, but it's coming. And the way that they, you know, the way they traded off for Seth, and they're holding on to Garoppolo, it tells me that Belichick sees it too. that they are, you know, their refusal to get a boatload of draft picks and the way they went about getting rid of most of their draft picks this past season and loading up on proven talent in terms of guys like Cooks tells me that that Bill knows that with Tom, this is the window. It's this year and next, and that's the Tom Brady window. That's it. And they are trying to win again right now. That's why they were willing to give up their future, you know, draft picks for guys now. And they've made it clear they're a lot like the Steelers. They are trying to win now because the Tom Brady window closes after this year or the next. I think Belichick sees it, and that's why he refuses to get rid of Garoppolo.
Well, that's very good analysis on your part, and it will be worth tracking the things that you talked about there to see, because with Peyton Manning at first, it was a little bit of a kind of slow kind of thing. He had a couple of bad games, and it turned into something more subsequently, so that will be worth keeping an eye on. Kyle Shanahan, the other reason, of course, they were able to come back there. If they don't blow that one field goal attempt and make it 31-20, that game's over. So a lot
well,
of
stuff. They just keep running the football.
Yes.
I think they, I mean, they were running the first half. They were running at will,
yep.
Running it down the Patriot throat.
Yep.
And they just, for whatever reason, they just decide. You know, I never understand when teams go away from something that's working.
Right.
It's almost like the coaches are just like, well, we've got that. We can always go to it. Let me try something else. That was just, look, it was idiotic play calling. They spend the entire second half and never even throw the football and just eat that clock up. You know, it's the Falcons by two touchdowns, and everybody's talking about, you know, Tom Brady lost another Super Bowl. Rather than, you know, saying, oh, he's the greatest of all time. I do think, you know, you could say that Tom Brady's been the best quarterback. Has he been the best quarterback in terms of skills? I don't think he's the best quarterback ever, but is he the greatest quarterback because of what he accomplished? I think the answer to that is yes. But, as we all know, Father Time is undefeated. And I saw it last year, and even the year before, there were times where there were cracks in the armor of Tom Brady. But see, and why he has a chance to perform well for the next couple of years, even with diminishing skills, is the fact that Belichick and that coaching staff will figure out how to design plays and protection around him to band-aid it, hide it. They will do it better than any other coaching staff could do that in the league. And that in, by itself could preserve Tom's, you know, shelf life a little bit. But at the end of the day, you know, he's an old man. He's the oldest quarterback in the league. And that cliff is coming where he mentally, you know, Peyton Manning mentally should see the field and know exactly what to do. He just couldn't do it. He physically was done. And that day is coming for Tom. I think we're going to see a lot this season. There's going to be some time when people are going to say, you know what? It might be over with. And we get into January, he's playing against a young gun like a Mariota, and that Tennessee Titans team, which I'm pretty high on, that could be it, and that could be sort of the swan song.
Irony of ironies, him and Peyton Manning. A game that comes to my mind when you're talking in those terms, the AFC Championship game the previous season. This is something we don't tend to remember much today, but he really didn't look very good in that game. And again, that was a historically great Broncos defense, but it was one of the first signs of what you're talking about as far as the trajectory there. We're coming up to Tennessee now as far as...
Rick, I got to tell you, you talk about Peyton Manning. I mean, I was at that game when the Broncos played in Cleveland.
Yeah.
And I was in the first row behind their bench. And, you know, you could up close, sometimes it's helpful to see that and watch Manning
mm-hmm.
on the sidelines and watching him from the pocket. I mean, I sat in that game, and that was what? The first half of that season. It was in the beginning of that season.
Right.
And we were a terrible football team. And we, there's no way we should have lost that game. Peyton Manning, you could see he couldn't even make a throw for an out. I mean, out on the flat. I mean, he was bad. I mean, really, really awful. And that year, the statistics proved it out. He was like the second to worst quarterback in the league. I mean, and he was in there because he knew the offense and the brain was there and sharp. But physically, he couldn't do anything. He was immobile. He couldn't make a throw. I mean, it was bad that the Browns had them I mean, the Browns lost only because of that defense, and they won that Super Bowl because of that defense. And I think the Pats have another run in them, but I think they did come out short this year.
I've always said Peyton Manning won one Super Bowl as Peyton Manning and won another Super Bowl as Trent Dilfer, basically, if you look at the trajectory of things there. But coming up to the AFC South, it's interesting. We've been through two divisions, I think, that are pretty cut and dried. We got one more ahead of us subsequently in the NFC with the North. The rest of these other ones are a lot more kind of like an ink block. You kind of stare at it, and different people will see different patterns. The AFC South, I think, is very characteristic of that. I'm going to take kind of a cop-out here as far as how I see the division shaking out. I've got three teams at 9-7 because I think they've all got things going for them and against them. I'm with you. You dropped a hint before about Tennessee. I've got them winning the division at 9-7. There are some things I like there. They've upgraded the skill positions offensively in the offseason. Mariota continues to make progress. I'm a believer in his. Indianapolis, I've got them at 9-7 and as a wild card team because we're starting to get to the point of the career with Andrew Luck where it's going to be a little bit of put up or shut up. And again, if things don't start happening a little bit more in Indianapolis, as much as he's had to overcome Ryan Grigson's crappy GMing over a period of time, it, fairly or unfairly, some of this reflects on him. So I see them making a playoff spot here, just basically more or less on his back, and in the second half of the season when I expect him to be fully recovered. Houston at 9-7, they're another one of these kind of teams. They were shaky making it the year before. I think they'll be about as good as they were last year. I think Watson is going to be at least medium term a great fit for them at quarterback. Some people are saying Dak Prescott-esque. I don't know if you agree on that or not.
Yeah, I kind of do.
Okay.
I think that you know, when I look at the South, I would pick the Titans to go 10-6 and win that division.
And I
just think that they have the most in terms of how they've upgraded that roster, talent, Mariota, that running game. I actually am a big fan of Corey Davis in a wide receiver spot. You know, we didn't really see any of him in this preseason. I think he's going to be a real player for them. I think that, again, this is a quarterback league. It's a quarterback league. And it's why I think the South is a lot easier to pick than you think.
Okay.
In that you've got Mariota, whose game has steadily improved each season. Then you've got Houston. They've got Savage. You know, I think he's a Brian Hoyer backup kind of guy. I like Savage.
Yes.
You know, but he's not bringing them deep into the playoffs. It's, you know, it's not going to happen. If he gets hurt or they got to go to Watson, I know you love Watson. He's still a rookie. He's going to struggle at points if Watson's the guy later in the season. So I didn't see the Texans getting beyond 9-7 or 8-8. That defense will lead the way. You know, they've got some talent at the skill positions, but it's a quarterback league. And I don't see at this point the Texans having a quarterback that should make you confident that they're going to make the playoffs. The same thing is with the Colts. The Colts are going to do as well as Andrew Luck can manage to follow. How far he can drag that, like,
yes,
target of a roster. You know, the reality is if you took Andrew Luck off that roster, you would rather have the Cleveland Browns roster than the Colts.
Oh, yes.
That thing is a dreadful football team. And if Andrew Luck isn't going to play for the first few weeks, they're going to lose those games. And if he gets hurt again or he's not what he was, they're going to lose a lot of football games. I'm just telling you. That's a team that if he comes back healthy somehow in week one or week two and he looks great and he's fine and he's recovered, you know, they're going to get to 9-7 and be like the Dolphins fighting for a playoff spot because of Andrew Luck. If he's hurt or not himself or can't play in a bunch of games, they're done. You know, they're going to be 6-10, 5-11. That is a terrible football team top to bottom. And then, you know, so again, it's a quarterback league. The Colts are going to go as far as quarterback.
Yes.
Which brings us, of course, to the Jaguars. They also don't have a quarterback, so they're doomed at best. They're probably a 5-11 club because of guys like Fournette, what should be a good defense, and, you know, the ability to run the football. Jaguars got a future. I mean, they really do. But I think this year they're probably about 5-11 again.
Yep.
No quarterback. So I think the South is easier to figure out than you think.
Okay.
I think it's the Titans. I have them at 10-6. I wouldn't be shocked if they went 11-5.
Right.
They've got the best quarterback right now in that division, and I say that only because he's healthy and he's upright and he knows the offense.
Right.
Luck has got garbage all around him, and he's coming off a shoulder surgery where none of us have any idea. I don't actually think the Colts do of how he's going to be physically. So right now, that division is a lot easier to pick than you think.
Interesting. And in looking at it, yeah, I've got Jacksonville at 5-11. And looking at Houston, this is over the course of the 10 years of the FDH Lounge, I've trotted out this geopolitical joke a few times. Wherever I feel like it applies here. When I look at the Houston wide receiving core and everybody not named DeAndre Hopkins, that old joke about Brazil is the country of the future and they always will be. That's what I think when I look at the receiving core not named Hopkins. All those guys, when are they going to do something?
I always appreciate your Brazil joke.
Thank you. I feel like it applies there, no question about it. In looking at the West...
Well, in some ways, that applies to the Jaguars.
Well, yes, as a franchise.
Years, everybody, they're the shifty pick, right, to suddenly make the playoffs.
Right.
People look at that roster and they go, boy, they should be good. And why aren't they good? Quarterback. Why have the Browns been terrible for 25 years? Quarterback.
Well, yeah, and Jacksonville, again, you look at them, and, you know, medium to long term, if you squint hard enough and you project just enough, yeah, you could see a good team well down the road, but they're quite a ways away. Well, we'll see if the AFC West, we'll see if you agree with my ink blot kind of thing there a little bit more, because this is a division where, as I've been going on sites like ESPN, CBS, kind of looking around, there's a lot of scrambled punditry out there as far as picking the order of this division. I am going to be one of the people who goes against the grain here. I know that the advanced metrics, the analytics, say that Oakland is due to come back to the pack after last year. I do not agree. I have them at 10-6. I think they're the best team in the division right now. It is a quarterback-driven league, as you say. Carr has taken so many great steps forward. I think he will take more steps forward this year. That defense isn't going to be nearly as bad as it was a year ago. So I think the skill level will catch up to, I think, where the Luck had them last year, more or less. I got them 10-6. Part of when you go through, especially in the AFC, it seems like every year there's a team I pick to make the playoffs, and it's only by default, just because you have to pick six teams to make the playoffs. And it doesn't mean that they're all going to be deserving. Quarterback remains a void, and that might be a kind way of saying it, in Denver, where it looks like it's going to be Trevor Siemian again here till they figure out what the direction is going to be. I got him at 9-7 just based on the defense and just based on, hey, I got to pick somebody to make the playoffs, and I got to go against Houston and Miami because, like I said, they're the low-hanging fruit from a year ago. You can't pick everybody to repeat in there. I've got Kansas City at 9-7. I think they're going to be right about generally where they always are. There's a lot to like at different positions on the team there. We'll see if Tyreek Hill, he's a big hipster pick for this year, as far as becoming more of an all-around offensive player. I heard such things about Tavon Austin years ago. Granted, I was more skeptical about him than I am Hill, but we'll have to see if the reality plays out the way that a lot of people are projecting. At 6-10, I'm a little more skeptical on the Chargers than a lot of people. They're a very trendy team for people to pick to advance upwards this year. I just look at that roster and I still see holes in a lot of different places here. And I don't necessarily believe that increased health and increased luck, both of which have worked against them the last couple of years, I don't think that's going to be enough to lift them in what you could make an argument would remain football's toughest division. So I got Oakland at the top, Denver still as a wild card, KC on the doorstep, Chargers a little bit back.
I think that's about right. I'm with you. I've got Oakland at the top. Mm-hmm. I think that they don't match last year's 12-4 record. I think they're probably more like 11-5. I'm a little bit, you know, I'm going to give them a little bit of benefit of the doubt because Carr and that offense will be in a rhythm. Their defense still tells me that they're not going to be able to get it done when it's all said and done because they just have to score too much. And if they lose a couple guys, you know, they could be in trouble. I do think that, so I've got Raiders in my mind 11-5. I have Chiefs in my mind at 10-6, somewhere in that area. or you know, sort of splitting with the Raiders. The Chiefs have a great defense. They're gonna, you know, they're gonna be competitive. I think it's gonna be Alex Smith for the first 6, 7, 8 weeks, and then I think they're gonna turn the ball over to Mahomes. I think that, you know, when they're winning football games 17-14, 17-15, I think at some point they say to themselves, we have a defense that's holding everybody, you know, somewhere to 20 points or less, and we're just not getting enough production out of that position in terms of playmaking with Alex Smith. Look for somewhere mid-late season for them to turn the reins over to Mahomes and to go on a little bit of an offensive spurt and make a push into the playoffs. Chargers, I don't know. To me, Chargers are the same old Chargers. It's Phillip Rivers and a bunch of guys. And they're going to waste another season of Phillip Rivers' life. That defense has got holes. I'm not a believer in the Chargers. I think that, you know, there is something to be said of how the move creates a hangover. Playing in front of 1,400 people in a soccer stadium is also going to be bad for morale. You know, I think the Chargers are looking at, you know, 6-10, 7-9, and then not to say they're going to be in last place, but Denver, you know, that defense has been good. It still is good. It's a great defensive roster. I don't know how far that can carry them. Trevor Siemian, Paxton Lynch, Brock Osweiler, is that quarterback room really any better than what the Browns have? Not by much. Maybe just a little bit of experience. If you're the Broncos, I think you're in at 8-8. That defense will hold the line. Siemian will make just enough plays to keep you in the ball game. He'll move the ball. He's a good system quarterback. But he's not going to. Are you getting into the playoffs with Trevor behind Siemian? I don't believe so. I think they're 8-8. I think they're going to lose some very close games that they should have won if they had a little bit better play at the quarterback position. And so I'm with you. I've got the Raiders, again, not convinced on their defense. The Chiefs right there, so close. But Alex Smith holds them back for the first 8 weeks, and then Broncos and Chargers.
Very interesting. And yet another Rick Morris strange analogy here. I seem to be zeroing in on wide receiving corps today. When I look at the Chargers, to me, again, you take Keenan Allen out of the mix. The rest of that wide receiving core, and I'm not saying that there's not talent there. There is. But in terms of being able to diagram it and say what the roles are going to be for the 2, 3, 4, and maybe even 5 guys, it's like the Sacramento Kings have been for the last dozen years or so. You can't look at that with any certainty and say, this is what the role of this guy is going to be, this is what the role of this guy is going to be. They're just kind of in there. The skill sets, again, some guys are better at some things than others. But, again, as far as how it's going to shake out, there's no predictability outside of Keenan Allen what the rest of that receiving core is going to look like. And you really have to have some kind of a sense of what to expect out of everybody.
Totally agree with you. And the other thing I would say about that division is, and I know I believe you're high on him as well, unfortunate situation why he's going to start, but Kareem Hunt's going to have a great year. He's going to be challenging for the offensive rookie of the year, and look for him to go over 1,000 yards, and he's going to be a star in the making with the Chiefs.
I think so. That's one of the premier system places in the league as far as producing running backs who are able to step up. Looking ahead to the playoffs here, I have some specific predictions. I'll say wild card round. In a true legend of Andrew Luck moment, I will say number 5 Indy over number 4 Tennessee in the wild card round. I see that being an all Andrew Luck kind of a situation. Number 3 Oakland over number 6 Denver, probably fairly easily. You get to the divisional round, number 1 New England over number 5 Indianapolis, deja vu. Number 5 Pittsburgh over number 3 Oakland. more deja vu in the championship game, yet another why are they bothering even playing it game, number one New England over number two Pittsburgh. You've said before you think it's going to be Pittsburgh coming out. You think it's going to be somebody taking out New England. Who do you think is most likely to be there with Pittsburgh? You think it could be Tennessee?
I think it's going to be Tennessee taking out New England. It'll be a Tennessee and Pittsburgh AFC championship when it all comes out. And in this case, Pittsburgh's experience and having a record that will probably be one game better will give them the home field, and home field at Heinz when they're not playing the Patriots will put the Steelers back into the Super Bowl, much to Cleveland Brown fans and everywhere.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely, and I can look forward to some blistering emails from my good friend and fellow FDH Lounge dignitary Bob Glassman about how it's all the fault of the Browns for trading them Joe Hayden and helping to put them over the top. So I look forward to that being
Joe Hayden's going to be serviceable for him this year. In that system, I think he would have been far less useful to the Browns. So I think for the Steelers, it makes sense. Look, it's a three-year deal that's basically a one-year deal.
Right.
You know, they're not sticking around with him because Joe has diminishing skills, and he's just providing the depth. And so, yeah, I think the Steelers, they're going to get it done. Joe's going to go to the Super Bowl, but I don't think he's going to win it.
Very interesting. I don't think there's a very good chance of the AFC winning the Super Bowl as well. We'll see if we concur on why that is when we talk NFC. Thank you, everybody, for joining us today for FDH Lounge Mini Episode number 873.
As we bring the show to a close, we would like to extend our deepest gratitude to NBC, CBS, ABC, Fox, All Clear Channel affiliates, TNT, TBS, USA, UPN, Deadspin.com, YouTube.com, YTMND.com, MySpace.com, various blogs, Fox News, CNN, CNBC, MSNBC, IamBored.com, Billboard.com, Google.com, ESPN, ESPN2, ESPN News, ESPN Classic, NBA TV, NFL Network, Sports Time Ohio, Athlon Magazine, Comedy Central, Cartoon Network, The Boomerang Channel, QVC, BET, The Spice Channel, Steno Notebooks, Manwich, Papermate Office Supplies, Waitresses, Strippers, Bartenders, Garbage Men, Janitors, Microwave Popcorn, The Writers of The Office, Scrubs, Entourage, My Name is Earl, Oz, Metalocalypse and the Boondocks, Awkwafina, and The Periodic Table of Elements.